king of sports books, comes the king of sports podcasts. Unleashed. Presented by BetMGM. Here's your host, Olivia Harlan Decker.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Unleashed. So glad to have you with us. I'm excited to run down everything happening in sports this week. You know, I really love this time of year because you're not so ingrained in regular season hoopla where it's just week after week after week and so much news. So you end up watching things like the European Championship in soccer or Wimbledon. I love watching Wimbledon. It's kind of a change of pace for us regular sports fans, at least in the US. I know we have a lot of international listeners too. So let's recap what's been going on. It was a busy week. Euro 2020 final in soccer wrapped up on Sunday. Italy versus England. England was favored. England was home. Italy wins in a penalty shootout. It was so exciting. They won the shootout 3-2 at Wembley, their first European championship since 1968. I know our resident gambling expert and resident Italian, Peter Andrew, will be excited to talk about that one later in the show. You know, he really called it last week too. So I hope y'all listened. He tried to make you some money. You got to listen to him. It's always at the end of the show. Also in UFC fighting, Dustin Poirier beats Conor McGregor. Conor suffered a gruesome leg injury, underwent successful leg surgery this week, but there's controversy about how the match ended. We'll talk more with Peter Andrew about that too. In tennis, Novak Djokovic wins his third consecutive Wimbledon championship, the 20th Grand Slam title, in a comeback victory over Italian Matteo Berrettini. He is now tied with Nadal and Federer for most Grand Slam titles. That is incredible. They both tweeted out their support. It was really awesome. You know, there's still the U.S. Open in New York. That's end of August. Should he win that, he would have the calendar year Grand Slam. That hasn't been done in over 50 years. You got to be cheering on the Joker for this one. And then golf, the Open. It's the oldest major. This is the 149th. It would have been the 150th, but it was canceled due to COVID. The first year the Open wasn't played since World War II, and that was the only major canceled last year. It was supposed to be the 150th year. It was going to be played at the Mecca of golf, St. Andrews. But no, that will be next year. This year, it's in Sandwich, England. Yum. Sandwich, also a word I always misspell. I'm looking at it right now. Sandwich, no extra H. Bubba Watson had to withdraw after being in contact with someone who tested positive for COVID-19. You know, the UK, they're being really strict. That's why this seems kind of odd to Americans. In the US, when an athlete is in close contact with someone who tested positive, they undergo daily testing. We've seen this happening in football and baseball and basketball all year long. But Bubba is vaccinated. That does not matter to this committee. He's replaced by Brendan Steele. Also, Masters champ Hideki Matsuyama withdrew after testing positive a couple weeks ago, July 2nd, because he would have continued to test positive and then have to quarantine in England, which could affect his Olympics participation. And then 2015 champion Zach Johnson, he tested positive. And then 2015 champion Zach Johnson tested positive, so he's also out. There are a lot of rules for golfers and caddies and their families. They can't go out to eat anywhere. They can't go to the store. They can't even walk to the course. If they want to stay at a hotel, it must be approved by the committee. They can't even see other players, really, and they don't care who is vaccinated and who's not. Golfers have to remain in incredibly tight bubbles because they can't risk someone in their party testing positive. The interesting thing is they are allowing 32,000 spectators a day. Now, that's down from their 40,000 capacity, but get this, their vaccine card allows the spectators to bypass the COVID test, but the same standard is not upheld for the golf pros. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of frustration from the pros. John Rahm says it's too much. Ricky Fowler has voiced his frustration. It's kind of been a mess. But we're still excited. That starts July 15th. And Peter Andrew at the end of the show will run down his favorites. Over to the NBA. Finals are hot. They are in Milwaukee. Game 4 Wednesday night in Milwaukee. After the Bucks dropped the first two games on the road in Phoenix. They also dropped the first two games in the series with the Nets in the semifinals. So that did not scare them. They've been calm. They've been cool in all of the media appearances, all the interviews. They win game 3 in Milwaukee. Let's kind of break this down a little bit. So Phoenix, they showed off game two in Phoenix. Great three-point shooting, 20 for 40. But now we kind of see depth being an issue for them. They had lost Dario Saric in the playoffs with a torn ACL. Torrey Craig was out for a bit game two. He comes back in game three. But then DeAndre Ayton in foul trouble Sunday night in Milwaukee, that's when they really exposed themselves. They shifted him off Giannis before that anyways, and Bridges went on him, and they couldn't compete. They have no answer. They couldn't counter the punch of Giannis Antetokounmpo. So we're seeing now that they're thin. They have the lack of size to play bully ball with the Bucks. So on a night when the threes aren't falling, we really saw that take effect. Now let's look at the Bucks. Giannis on fire. He's improving every game from a health perspective after hyperextending his knee in the Atlanta series. Game two, he played 40 minutes. He couldn't really seem to move side to side. It was a major concern for Bucks fans. Much better in game three. He finished with 41 points, 13 boards. He was also just more aggressive. He took fewer threes. He attacked the rim. He made his free throws. Thank God. And great defense. He's an incredible two-way player, and he's showcasing right now at the highest level at the perfect time, especially coming off an injury. Are you kidding? It's so impressive. He's also just showing more emotion. We saw in game two, he slammed a chair. He's begging for the ball when too much time has gone by and he hasn't gotten it. That's what everyone's wanted to see from our two-time MVP. They need to see that crazy in his eyes. They need to see that he refuses to lose. Another aspect that went the Bucks' way, Drew Holiday. Where was he in Phoenix? He came alive Sunday night in game three. He hit some of the biggest threes of the game. And Phoenix was just 9 of 31 from three. So this was the Bucks for the taking. It led to a 20-point victory. Something that needs to be mentioned here with the Giannis narrative. It's interesting, the schedule of the finals. They hurried the series up to, I think, to keep momentum and interest from a national perspective, because not too big markets. You got to keep the storylines going. You got to keep a national audience. So they sped up game one and everything's been going from there. If they had waited a little bit, if they had waited the time they normally do for finals for the following series, that could have given Giannis Antetokounmpo way more time to recover. His ceiling and ability, as we've seen each game progress, could have been there for game one. So at the risk of sounding like a homer, y'all know I'm a Bucks fan. If the scheduling had been what it has in the past, it's a couple extra days for the two-time MVP to recover. And we've seen each day has mattered so much to Giannis in his healing of that knee. So the Bucks won their first finals game in 47 years, game four, Wednesday in Milwaukee. That is going to be a good one. Now, my husband and I had the pleasure of going to one of the Bucks-Hawks games, Eastern Conference Finals. That was so much fun. And we were kind of laughing about it on the way of all the games we've gone to as a couple. There really are not many because I usually go to watch his game. So we're not sitting together. We're not driving there together. You get the idea. But we did break down some of the first Packer games we've gone to as a couple, and we kind of came up with a list of rules, right? Like, how do you go to a game with your significant other? Because let me tell you, that can get hairy, people. You've got to have a game plan, especially if you're fans of the same team, right? What do you do if they lose? What do you do if they win? Are you seeing people? Are you not seeing people? When are you eating? All this, you got to think about it. It's coming up next in our couple's guide to watching or going to a sporting event together. You'll love this. So what happens if you and your significant other like different teams? Or worse, what if one of you loves going to games, the other one doesn't? What if one of you loves watching games all day on a Saturday, Sunday, all year, and the other one doesn't? I mean, you got a problem. So Sam and I are going to help you out and kind of give you a breakdown of how to watch sports together as a couple, and even harder, maybe go to games together as a couple. What do you think, hon?
Yeah, I just think like with anything, there's give and take that has to happen with anything in relationship, whether that's favorite restaurants or, you know, even some very serious things like, you know, joining a different church.
Wow.
Sports is kind of a religion for some people. So yeah. Sports is very, very religious for some people. So sometimes you actually have to convert to your spouse's favorite teams, favorite venues, but some other people don't. So I think we've had a pretty good happy medium of our favorite teams. And we're kind of in a different different area with, you know, our jobs, but I think we've rubbed off on each other a little bit. What do you think?
Totally. Well, one thing that we have always had in common, and that truly I think is kind of how we started dating, is we're both huge Packer fans. So we're on the same page there, but I've got a couple tips and tricks of what to do when you're going to a game together. Number one, I think you have to make sure you're on the same page of when you want to get into the stadium. You know, some people, they don't mind tailgating and missing the first couple innings, or in football, the anthem or the first couple drives. Mm-hmm. Other people would hate to have a ticket to a game and miss kickoff.
Yeah.
And I think we're both on the same page, but I know we've had this conversation of, okay, Liv, we got to go get in line. Like, we got 30 minutes till kickoff, you know, and other couples and people are like, oh, you know, we have time for another beer. I mean, what do you think about that first? As a rule of thumb, know when you're going into the stadium.
Yeah, I think you have to talk that through. Because I remember our first Packers game we went to, we didn't talk that through. And I was like, game's about to start. We got to get in line. Game's about to start. Let's go. And you're like, no, we're good. Like, we'll wait till the line is dead.
Oh, gosh. But I'm embarrassed.
I'm an athlete. So I'm on Lombardi time always.
Oh.
And word to Vince Lombardi.
Oh,
his thing was, if you're 15 minutes early, you're late.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, as an athlete, you know, I hate not being on time for things.
Yes.
So it even is for being in my seat for the game. You need to talk that through with the girl or guy that you're going to the game with, because if you're on different wavelengths, it's going to start the game off poorly. So now we're on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
I concede that I don't need to see kickoff, but then we get in there right away and we watch the rest of the game.
You kind of have to draft a game plan before you go, especially, like you said, if it's your first game together. So know when you want to be in your seats. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Two, know when you're going to eat. Like, are you eating in the parking lot? Are you getting a Dodger dog at the game? When are you eating? Mm-hmm. And make sure it's at the same time. And then three, I would say know your game plan, win or loss. So if you lose, you know, one of you may want to go home and brood.
Mm-hmm.
The other one may be like, oh man, tough loss, but like, want to go meet up with our friends at blah, blah, blah. So I think have a game plan, win or lose, so that you know what to expect from the other. I think those are three good rules to follow.
I agree, but I think you also need to know, what kind of fan is your significant other? Mm-hmm. Is it a diehard?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a, oh, we're leaving early if we're losing guy? If it's seventh inning, you're down, are you leaving? Or 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you're down three touchdowns, are we leaving? Or is your significant other the one that's, no, we stick it out, we ride or die for our team? And
I know which one you are.
It may be hard depending who you are. Yeah, I don't love leaving early.
No.
Hey, I'm sticking through with this team. You never know what kind of comeback you may be able to see. For example,
Super Bowl.
Yes. Do you remember? We literally said it was end of the third. We said, if it gets to 35-3.
This is Patriots Falcons.
Yes. Yes.
2017.
February 2017.
Yeah.
Yes. And I remember we looked at each other. He said, if it gets to 35-3, do we have the discussion about beating the crowd?
Yeah.
There's going to be 100,000 people outside. You know, this is a blowout. And we looked at each other. We said, after this drive, we'll see. And that's when
Patriots
forced a turnover, came back and scored. And we said, okay, we're in it for the long run. But the fact that we even thought about it
is humiliating.
To this day, it bothers me.
Me too.
I have to admit it. But we did think about it, because 35-3 was a lot different than 28-3. So I'm glad that you and I both said we should stick it out.
Yeah, that is a memory we will not forget. But there is one thing we're not always on the same page on. And I actually brought it up on our MLB show. I love going to an MLB game, right? Mm-hmm. Like sitting in the sun, having a hot dog. It's a great way to spend an afternoon. You don't miss a Brewers game. Like, we'll be watching a movie. We've been out to dinner, and I think I've seen your phone like under the table watching a Brewers game. You don't miss a single game. And that bothers me. Like, I'm a sports girl, and I just don't think you need to catch every Brewers game.
Yeah, agree to disagree. And I think that's where we're at in that part of our relationship. But you've been better about just being like, yeah, this is the team Sam loves, and he can watch. But, you know, I think you're fully on board with baseball.
Oh, you're obsessed.
One of our fondest memories was going to a World Series game, Astros Dodgers, on Halloween night in LA. That was one of the coolest dates we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
But
very cool.
It's one of those things, when it's not your team during the regular season, I understand that it sounds weird, because I would never watch a Reds game, or I would never watch a Tigers game randomly. But it's my team. I'm going to watch them. I want to support them. So
okay. That's
how I am. I try to keep the volume on low. I just have it on the background. It's easy to walk in and out when my favorite guys are hitting and whatnot. So I appreciate you just humoring me. Let me get through it and get it out of my system for the day. But I love supporting my Brewers. I always will. And I appreciate that you've kind of slowly came on that journey with me.
Yeah. Well, it's like background noise at this point. And my sister is married to a huge baseball fan. So we both have this same hardship that we're just like, oh, I hate baseball season. You just feel like you're competing with the MLB for your attention.
Well, hey, you always got my attention first and foremost. Remember that.
No. Well, let's not be too cheesy so people don't switch off right away. But that is our couple's guide to watching sports together. Lions Lock, our final segment, and the segment you might want to pay the closest attention to because it'll affect your wallet this weekend. We bring in our betting expert, Peter Andrew, who's also kind of our resident Italian fan. So a very happy Peter Andrew. Peter, welcome back.
Thanks. Yeah, big day for me. I think I just stopped celebrating about 3 hours ago. So it's been a fun 24 hours.
Ooh, ouch. You just need to hydrate, my friend. Just hydrate.
That's it. I woke up this morning a little foggy, but it's been all good.
I love it. So just walk us through because it happened in such exciting fashion. I talked in the first segment about the penalty kicks and whatnot, but I felt like for the first time in a long time, Americans really cared about this match. It was so good.
Yeah. So first time, long time. I mean, really, really exciting game. Americans here have a lot of bias towards both England and the Italian team. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of Italians live here. My hometown is an example. Completely shut down. I think everybody was in the middle of the street. So it was crazy.
Wow.
And you have a lot of English fans here for obvious reasons too. I mean, it's only a couple hours away from the East Coast here. A lot of fans support them. A lot of people love Premier League. So overall, you just have a lot of excitement towards the game, which was great. And we really need it, you know, here in the US for soccer.
So England scored early and then went into defensive mode. And that's where the wheels kind of fell off. But, you know, that's a great thing about soccer. And it's so easy to be a fan of. A lot of kids grow up playing soccer and it's a pretty easy sport. I know there are some, you know, there's minutiae in the rules, but it's a pretty easy sport to watch and follow. Walk us through after England scores that first goal. What happened?
Yeah. So you kind of said it there. Let the foot off the gas. I think they had all the pressure in the world. And against an Italian team that is so tactical, every player knows exactly where they need to be. Mm-hmm. If you don't keep the pressure on them, it's a matter of time before they start exploiting you and taking over possession, which is what happened. I think by the 70th minute, it was 65-35 or 70-30 in terms of possession for the Italians. And every time you look, they didn't have a lot of presence in the box, but they were just controlling the entire game. So when England kind of lost that momentum after the first 5 to 7 minutes, it was a matter of time before Bonucci would, you know, eventually score that goal before they put a ton of pressure on. And that's ultimately, I think, if you talk to English fans, that's ultimately what led to their defeat.
How long was the game in total? Do you know?
In terms of running time?
Mm-hmm.
So it was 120 minutes. It probably was like 2.5-3 hours, I guess, with all the stoppages and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. It seems long just because there's so much going on, but that's nothing more than a, you know, American college football game or something. I've had 4+ hour football games.
It's something to do with the running clock where every time you look and it's just like, oh my God, it's only the 23rd minute, only the 31st minute, only the 45th minute.
Yeah.
But I felt the same way. It really felt like it was super slow, but there was pockets of excitement. And then certainly as it got towards the kicks, it got really exciting.
Oh my gosh. So exciting. You can't ask for anything better in sports than when it all comes down to the final.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about UFC. You said that would be a quick fight. Conor McGregor and Poirier. You said McGregor had it. He had extra time to train, but of course he got hurt. Walk us through though, because it ended kind of controversially. The crowd was booing, let's say, on the way out. Fill in the gaps there.
Yeah. So first off, it was a good result for the sports books.
Yeah.
So even though McGregor was the underdog, he was the favorite in a lot of normal folks' eyes. Mm-hmm. So everybody obviously has that affinity towards McGregor, his style, his cockiness, everything.
Yeah.
So it was a good result for us. But obviously, as people who listened last week know, I was on McGregor in first round. it's really difficult. You heard him screaming, "Doctor stoppage, doctor stoppage."
Yeah.
He wanted it to be clear that he didn't lose the fight, that they called it on account of his injury, which was terrible, by the way.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a while because he either broke his fibula or his ankle. It's probably going to be over a year from now, but I find no reason why they wouldn't have a fourth fight.
That is not what he tweeted. He said 6 weeks on crutches and he's back.
Yeah. As we know, McGregor always tells the truth. So,
yeah.
But the way those guys were talking, I mean, he made a comment about Poirier's wife being in his DMs.
Crazy.
They were calling each other names. They're completely out of control. I can't imagine they don't fight again. But it was a quick fight. It was a quick fight for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
There was a point that Poirier looked like he was going to end it. I think he threw a couple of those hammer fists while he had McGregor in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I thought the card was great. I mean, a ton of the fights ended in knockouts. You had a little bit too much blood at times. But overall, I think it was a really good day.
There's a lot of theater in fighting in general. I think UFC people like to think is the most legitimate of them all. But with the theater, with the McGregor, like things he was saying, what's your take on how that adds to the storyline?
Yeah, I like it to an extent. I think there's a line that he certainly crossed, which is, and Poirier kind of said it. It's like, talk crap to me all you want. The minute you talk about my wife.
No families.
Yeah, exactly. No families. Don't say anything about. And before the fight, apparently he was saying that he's going to end in a casket, Poirier. And you don't need to take it that far.
No.
you don't need to wish death upon people. You could just kick their ass.
I also hate to laugh at that, but it's like, you don't take it seriously, but you're so excited to watch him fight the next time, right?
Yeah, it really, I mean, to that point, it really does help because you just can't turn away from your TV. But then when you look at it back and you kind of reflect on it, you're like, man, that was a ridiculous thing to say.
Let's talk about golf. The Open Championship begins July 15th. Shane Lowry is the defending champ. It's at Royal St. George's in Sandwich, England, which I've got to ask you, what's your favorite sandwich?
My favorite sandwich probably be turkey BLT, I think.
Well, that's pretty simple. Not Italian meatball?
If we start throwing meatballs and chicken cutlets in there, I might have to be persuaded then.
Oh, I love it.
Simple I usually like, but I'm an Italian, so anything with bread works for me.
Well, St. George's has a reputation for being so tough. It's kind of a quirky course. The weather can be up in the air sometimes in England. Overall, what is your take on the field and the course in general? Anything you know about it?
Yeah, so Lynxy style course, obviously, that's what it always is for the Open Championship. I think these guys, you know, this week are going to have to be really, really accurate off the tee, which is why I look at a guy like Bryson DeChambeau, who can be a little bit sloppy off the tee. He may hit it a million miles, but a lot of times he's going left and right with it. I don't think a player like him has a shot. I think it has to be someone who's really, really consistent, hit long iron shots, hit good, you know, woods, whether it be three wood or the driver. Mm-hmm. John Rahm is the first one. He's plus 750, comes to mind for me. Mm-hmm. He played unbelievable in the Scottish Open last week. I think he had
his first major title.
Yeah, first major title. I think he's going to be right there. He's actually the favorite. Mm-hmm. He shot a front 929 last week at the Scottish Open, which was crazy. He had 6-7 birdies or something like that. He's a guy who's just playing really well right now, you know, and he took those 2 weeks to come to UK, play the Scottish Open, get familiar again with links style courses, practice a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to have a strong week. I also like Victor Hovland plus 2,800. Shane Lowry, as you mentioned, defending champion at plus 4,000. And an interesting one is Mark Leishman plus 6,600. He's finished sixth or better in his last six open starts. So he's been right there. And I know the course changes every year, but he's been right there. He knows how to play this style of golf. I think he'll be really interesting. And then two others. Lowry is the top Irishman, plus 175. So I don't think Rory has a particularly great tournament this week.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tyrrell Hatton as the top Englishman, plus 500. That's kind of where my head has been at.
It's interesting with Rory, too. He missed the cut last time. Of course, that was 2 years ago, as last year was skipped with COVID. But do you wonder if that plays in your head at all? Because it was on his home turf 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think for that exact reason it does. It's the place he wants to really show up and perform. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be in his head a little bit. He has played a bit better this year. Obviously, last year with COVID, like you said, he has played a bit better. But I do think he kind of finds his way down the list a little bit.
Same with Bryson DeChambeau. He has not done well in this Open historically. He missed cuts in 2017 and 19. He tied for 51st in 2018. I didn't realize that. I had to go back and look at that. And he's breaking in a new caddy. How much does that play a factor?
Yeah, it certainly makes a difference. Playing on a different style course, like a links course, what happened 2 weeks ago was crazy, but it is going to make a considerable difference. There's a lot of different clubs that these guys are going to be picking from for certain shots, where it may be that 9-iron that you'd always hit on a regular course here in the US. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to think differently with the conditions, the greens, the fairways. Everything is just a bit different. It's a totally different style of golf. So it really is going to matter. And if you have a guy that's just not really familiar with Bryson and how he plays, and maybe going in between clubs, it's going to matter.
So Peter, next year, it's the 150th anniversary of the Open and it's at St. Andrews. How much begging do you think we can do to our bosses at BetMGM to have like live unleashed coverage there?
I think it's going to be easy. I think me and you have a conversation with them this week anyway. So I think we just start putting in the request now.
Okay. A good year out.
Yeah. Well, I'll be in the pro-am. You'll be doing all the live coverage as people are coming through the tee boxes. It'll be perfect combo.
I love that. Okay, back to NBA. You know, we are recording this before game 4 in Milwaukee, but Giannis has made it clear that he is not hampered. Game 3, my gosh, he was unleashed. And now it puts in the MVP conversation. We go back and forth on this all the time. You said it's so binary. It's pretty much either Chris Paul or Giannis. What other names are coming up now that we are seeing like Jrue Holiday getting back to shape in game 3?
Yeah, it's I think the only other person you can really consider in the conversation is Devin Booker.
Yeah.
Because of his game 2. I think the pressure really is on the Suns now. It's kind of crazy to think after a pretty commanding 2-0 lead that the pressure is off them. But, you know, going into game 4 on Wednesday, they're obviously in Milwaukee again. A lot of pressure to just try to move that series to 3-1. If it goes to 2-2, it really becomes anyone's series again. So I expect Booker and CP3 to have a really, really pivotal role, obviously, but an extra pivotal role for game 4 and beyond.
Well, the best part for our part as spectators and as commentators is we know it's not going to be over Wednesday night now. We know they're going back to Phoenix. So what other bets this weekend should NBA fans be looking at?
Yeah, so I started building a little one game parlay. So for anybody that's not familiar, you can place all different types of prop bets on BetMGM all into one bet. So a little one that I was looking at, again, odds are going to change a little bit based off what happens, but handicapping the Suns at home to right around a pick'em. Chris Paul, 25 points, Devin Booker, 30 points, and the over 220. I think some of those games back in Phoenix will be high scoring, plus 900. So you bet $10, you win 90 bucks right there, which is a nice little chunk of change. And all four of those things that I mentioned are pretty easily feasible. I mean, Chris Paul can easily have a 25 point game. We know Devin Booker can get hot. He can score way over 30, as we've seen.
Oh, yeah.
And if you take the Suns at like a pick'em, that's pretty fair. And then the over. So you get really decent odds there, plus 900. I think that's a good bet. You know, it's a little bit risky, but you got to do that, especially coming down the stretch here for the NBA Finals.
All right, Peter Andrew, thank you so much. Go back and have a meatball sub and a glass of red wine or whatever you Italians do when you celebrate something good. Congratulations.
Thanks, Olivia. I was going to do the podcast in Italian, but I figured we might lose some viewership. So maybe we'll save that for next year, too.
Oh, are you fluent?
Not fluent, but enough to get by. Enough to say the bad words. So,
okay.
That's all that really matters.
Peter Andrew, arrivederci.
Ciao, grazie.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Make sure to check out all the action from BetMGM. Follow them everywhere at BetMGM. And please leave a review of the show on Apple Podcasts and follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Bye, guys.